Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. The big news in baseball from yesterday, Derek Jeter and Larry Walker are going to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Also still getting to the aftermath of the Houston Astros and Boston Red Sox issues with the cheating scandal. The Mets now on today did name their new manager replacing Carlos Beltran in Luis Rojas. So let's talk about it all with one of the best from the MLB Network, and that's Brian Kenny. You could watch Brian as he hosts MLB's Network's MLB Now weekdays at 2 p.m. and then again at 7:30 p.m. Eastern throughout the offseason. Brian, appreciate you taking a few minutes. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, it's been a very busy time of the year for baseball. I know you're the best at this Hall of Fame stuff. So give me the reaction to Jeter getting in. Everyone knew it was going to happen. The question was, would it be at 100%? And Larry Walker was getting close, and he made a rise the last few years, but we weren't sure if he was going to get in, but definitely well-deserved.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, first, you don't want to bury the lead that this is the type of player that the Hall of Fame was built on. You know, this is the type of player that attracts national attention, that's an iconic figure. Just like, you know, 1939, the museum opened up, and there was, you know, was Babe Ruth and Honus Wagner and the all-time greats. And I really think Derek Jeter is up there with, you know, Mantle, DiMaggio, Brooks Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. He is a, you know, iconic figure, a first ballot Hall of Famer, however you want to phrase it. But he's the type of player that the Hall of Fame gained its legitimacy around, that these are, this is our royalty. This is our, you know, baseball royalty. And Jeter was not only a great player, he handled himself with grace and class in New York City, winning 5 World Series titles and 7 pennants. So that's the lead. And Larry Walker, you know, we aired the news conference of the two of them, and I'd even written this before because I host the ceremony in the summertime. It's nice to share the ceremony with somebody. It's nice to share the stage. And even during the news conference today, having Larry Walker there, who I think is, you know, one of the top 10 right fielders of all time, and he's a very worthy Hall of Famer, having him there with Derek Jeter is good. You just don't want to have one guy. I know Ted Simmons will be there, and hopefully someone from Marvin Miller's family this summer. But it just adds to it. There's room for more players of this generation, and there's also I'm also pro joy, and I think to see the joy on Larry Walker and the joy of for Colorado Rockies fans is a positive thing for all of us.
You may have to wear a SpongeBob SquarePants shirt now to the ceremony.
Yeah,
that was great yesterday.
That yesterday. That was unexpected.
Brian Kenny here with us on CBS Sports Radio. It's the Zach Gelb Show. So the conversation with Jeter, I know we should be celebrating him getting in the Hall of Fame, but one voter, we still don't know who the voter is, elected to keep him off the ballot. I'm just fascinated, Brian, what the explanation is, because one thing I don't like, and I've said this over the years, and I said it last year with Mariano Rivera when people were annoyed, some people that he got in at unanimous decision. Well, look at all the other all-time greats that didn't get in at 100%. I get the point, but I don't see how anyone could really keep Jeter off the ballot. I don't get what the potential reasoning could be.
I don't get it either. The only plausible reason that I would find plausible is if you used all 10 slots which is not as much of a thing this year. The last couple of years, you legitimately could say, I'm going 12 deep on my list. I only have 10. And if I don't put Chipper Jones on my list, that's why. Because I wanted to keep Fred McGriff alive. Or I wanted to get, you know, Fred McGriff or Scott Rolen, keep him above the 5%. Because guys like Jim Edmonds and Bernie Williams have fallen off the ballot, you know, by falling off 5%. So maybe someone did that. That's the only reason that is anywhere legitimate. Because other than that, it makes zero sense. There's no way you could justify it. At the same time, look, I'm trying to get past vote shaming. I used to be a big vote shamer. Do you know what I mean? I used to, you know, call out these old writers, these old guard writers, saying you're not doing the proper comparative analysis. You know, really think before you vote, and hey, dig deep on Ron Santo, and hey, take a closer look at some of these other candidates, and you know, who it is. I'm big on Dwight Evans and Keith Hernandez. Do a little more work. But I would rip into these writers years ago, but now, as a society, all we do is rip into each other. The vote shaming that exists on social media is so vicious, it's not fun anymore. You know, it's not, and guys really just, it seem to get savaged. So I understand why the Hall has actually rebuffed the request from the Writers Association and said, you have the option of not going public. Normally I would say, hey, give your vote and defend it. You should be fine doing that. If you can't, don't vote. But I understand in this day and age that you could be savaged online, that I understand why the Hall wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of nasty things that are said on the internet. There's no doubt about that as we're talking with Brian Kenny. With Schilling, I've said this for years that Schilling should be in. I think the politics play a role in it. I think that, you know, people hold it against him. I don't agree with everything he says, obviously, politically. Where do you stand on Schilling?
Oh, I was surprised that Schilling didn't get voted in for his ballot. At the time, remember, his stock was sky high. He was a flat-out winner, great postseason pitcher, one of the best of all time, had won a title with the Diamondbacks, two with the Red Sox. He basically drove two of those championships, you know, on his back. You know, obviously with others, the Red Sox were great, and Randy Johnson was with the Diamondbacks. But without him, they don't win either of those titles. And I just thought he would get in. He debuted at 39% and then fell to 29%. And I remind people of this. At the time, he was doing Sunday Night Baseball for ESPN. He was not the pariah that he is now. He hadn't made any of those, or many of those, incendiary comments on social media. So there was something where the writers were missing something with him. And I guess it's just the old-fashioned number of wins. He had 216 wins, and that wasn't enough. Now, that's ignorance. Now, beyond that, I think the character clause has come up where many writers use that to say, I don't want to vote for players who use performance-enhancing drugs. And if you're already thinking along those lines, you could extend that to think, you know what, I don't want to grant this man baseball's highest honor. It's an honor. I'm voting to see if this man should be honored or not. And you can say, I don't believe he should be representing baseball and deserves that honor. I don't think it's far-fetched. I don't think it's a left-wing conspiracy. I think it's that the guy has done a lot of things to embarrass himself and baseball. I'd say it to his face. I don't enjoy saying that. And I think a lot of his things on social media are things that he wouldn't be saying in person. I think, like a lot of us, we become a caricature on social media. I think that's somewhat happened to Kurt, but I would understand someone not voting for him, even though playing-wise, he certainly is above the Hall of Fame line.
Does that mean we need to take the character clause out in the guidelines? Because, you know, I look at the goal for me, the way I interpret it, and everyone has a different interpretation, and people look at the rules a lot more carefully and all that. I get that. But I want great players in the Hall of Fame. Good guy or not, whatever, you know, even the steroid guys, Bonds and Clemens, you know, I just feel it's ridiculous that we hold them out of the Hall of Fame, because for me, the Hall of Fame should be able to tell the history of all the all-time great players, and I consider those guys great players. I know you go to an exhibit and in the Hall of Fame and they make mention of them, but when you're in that plaque section, I think we should see these names, you know, good character or not.
I think I disagree with that. I'm not so resolute on it. I'd like to see the character clause swing both ways, and I'd like to see players like Dale Murphy and Don Mattingly get extra credit for being players that everybody in the game says that they are the standard by which others should be measured. At the same time, I have to say, are we outraged now about sign stealing and that sort of thing? I think everybody is. Oh, this is terrible. The Astros, they're dirty. They're cheating. Well, they were surreptitiously looking to gain an advantage. Well, what is taking steroids? Surreptitiously looking to gain an unfair advantage. And that's what these players did, or are suspected of doing. And I would say you're choosing to honor them or not. I've said this for years now, I have to go back and forth on this, but I would try to choose to honor the clean player. I would rather give my vote to Fred McGriff than Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. You know, and I don't like it. I don't, I, I I don't like, I don't enjoy all this steroid talk over the last 20 years. And yet, if I was choosing, I would say those guys, they cheated against, they cheated other players. And I would choose not to honor them.
Does that mean that we should not let managers, I know the commissioner, Bud Selig's in, should that not happen then, just wondering? Because that was all the same era.
It, look, I don't extend it past, you know, people have said that about Tony La Russa and managers. I don't expect managers or coaches or their fellow players to narc on people. Or a commissioner, why didn't you do something? Actually, the Players Association was much more instrumental in blocking steroid testing than the commissioner's office. Much more. I've lived through it. It's a fact. So, but you're responsible for your actions. These guys chose to surreptitiously take hormones, testosterone, to gain an advantage. And they had to do it, you know, systemically. It's not something you did once and you made a mistake or you drove drunk or, you know, you got in a bar fight or something like that. No, this is something you did month after month, year after year. You chose to do it over the long haul, over several years. That is an organized, systematic way to cheat. So I would choose not to honor those guys with baseball's highest honor.
With Clemens and Bonds, they're now just went through year 8 in the voting process, so two more years left. 61% this year for Roger, and I think it was, what, a little under 61% for Barry Bonds this year. Do you think they'll get in by year 10? Do you think people will come around the next 2 years?
I don't think so, but I'm not positive on that. I think it's going to be different next year because a lot of the top players have cleared the ballot now. Next year, Curt Schilling heads the class. The new class is guys like Torrey Hunter, who are, you know, not, you know, I don't want to say not strong candidates, but they're not first ballot guys or anything like that. So Tim Hudson, Mark Burley, Torrey Hunter. And I think writers will look down that ballot, and who knows how many. They need about 55 or 56 more to look down that ballot and say, what am I doing, really? I think I'll switch. But I don't think that'll happen. I think those who are not voting for him are doing it for a reason, and I think they'll hold out for two more years. I think the tough part will be year 10, A-Rod and Big Poppy hit the ballot, and that's going to be something else. So who knows what happens in that year? That's 2022.
The A-Rod one, I can't wait to see what happens because his image, as you know, is totally different than what it was a few years ago.
Yeah, and it shows you that things change. You know, this guy's a pariah. This guy, you know, nobody wants anything to do with him. And then suddenly, oh, he's back up on top. So I think it will be fascinating to see what his vote total becomes. And that's part of the reason why I believe they changed the 15 years to 10 years. Because in 15 years, like by the time A-Rod would be on the ballot for year 15, who knows what the voting will be? And I'm sure I hear from many writers who say, hey, there's a couple of guys who I think did steroids who are already in, so I don't know, I'll just vote for them all. I don't get that. I don't agree with that. However, certain writers think that. And I think when David Ortiz, who failed survey testing, gets in, and I think he's going to get in, I think then they'll look at A-Rod and go, I don't know, what am I doing? Hey, and Bonds and Clemens are still sitting there. So is Sammy Sosa. So if you believe in performance only, have at it. Vote them all in. Don't forget Sammy. Get Sammy in there.
Oh, I'm with you.
Hey, don't forget Manny. Manny failed tests, but if you're good with that, then go all performance only. Performance only is a consistent vote. I don't agree with it, but at least it's consistent.
No, I agree with you. People should be consistent. I've said that now for years, that if you're going to put one roid guy in, you know, throw the rest of the PED guys in as well. And in my mock ballot, that doesn't mean for anything. You could see that it does go in line with that. A few more with Brian Kenny. Is there a guy, you know, clearly we disagree on the clean guys against the guys that we're using, but is there a guy in your mind that is clean that you thought, you know, over the last few years or maybe even the last year or two has been overlooked when looking back at the results yesterday?
Oh, yeah, I already said his name, Fred McGriff. I think when you look at Fred McGriff from any angle, he was a great player. By the way, when he was playing, he was seen as a great player. He was a game changer. When he was traded, when he was a free agent, he was a big guy. He was a pennant chase changing player. And between 93, 94, and 1995, this guy just was a flat out monster for the Atlanta Braves. He was everything advertised. And unfortunately, there was no World Series or playoffs in 1994, but he was a great playoff player. He was the best player on the Braves team when they won their one World Series title. The Atlanta Braves, their one title. And he was an outstanding, you know, consistent over a 15-year period, you know, power hitting first baseman. And I've done the essays on MLB Now. He also, you know, unfortunately hit 493 home runs. Now, I don't need to hang my hat on that, but the image for McGriff, unfortunately, was tied to not getting 500 home runs at a time when the juiced guys, the guys you're fine with putting in the Hall of Fame, shot right past him like he was going out of style. And that was McGuire, Sammy, and Bonds. And up until then in the history of baseball, players were only getting, you know, 40 home runs a pop to move up the all-time home run list. Suddenly that was almost doubled. And so everybody, when he retired, 493 was still a lot of home runs. 5 years later, there was guys just shooting past him that were well above him still playing. So it was completely devalued, and Fred barely stayed on the ballot. But Fred McGriff, in his 20s, was every bit the player Barry Bonds was offensively. All right, not defensively, but offensively. He was that good. I think he was like neck and neck with Bonds in his 20s, right? Skinny Barry, when Barry was about the best player in baseball, neck and neck with him offensively. That's how good Fred McGriff was. He's fallen off the ballot, and I think that's wrong. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
I'm with you on McGriff as well. You can watch Brian host MLB Network's MLB Now weekdays at 2 p.m. and again at 7:30 p.m. throughout the offseason. Two more with Brian Kenny here with us, and he's been great talking about the Hall of Fame on CBS Sports Radio. It's the Zach Gelb Show. Astros and Red Sox, what do you feel about those two teams right now in terms of what they're going to look like from a performance standpoint this year?
Well, look, the Astros are still going to be pretty good. I don't know what – I mean, I think they're – the era of dominance for the Astros, I think, has closed. As far as, like, the era just ended, as far as them moving forward. But even the remnants of what Jeff Luhnow built is still a powerful club, even without Gerrit Cole. I mean, they won 107 games last year. They're still going to be outstanding. Now, maybe that's not enough to get past the Yankees this year, but they'll still be very good. The Red Sox have all sorts of issues. I mean, Chaim Bloom, who comes over from the Rays, like, he inherited all sorts of headaches.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd said on the air, Zach, you'll crack up. But I said at the time, I said, hey, if you're a GM, I mean, in the real world, you're a real life person with a wife and children, and you have to move and you have to get into a house, and then you have to live somewhere and do all that and then go to work. Would you rather have the GM job with the Pirates or the Red Sox? And I think I might take the Pirates.
Wow.
You know, Chaim Bloom doesn't come over with, like, you know, that they say the blank checkbook. No, that money's spent. He's in debt. He walks in, he's in debt. It's like, hey, trade our best player.
Yeah,
hey, what are you going to do with David Price? He's a problem. Hey, Chris Sale no longer throws with any velocity. And then it's like, hey, we're over payroll. Cut payroll. Hey, by the way, we still have to win. I mean, we have to win every year or we'll fire you. He's got real problems.
Let me, before we let Brian Kenny run, and this has been great, the Mets, do you think they had to get rid of Beltran? Clearly, Manfred, in my opinion, wanted Beltran out. The Mets could have pushed back. They elected not to do so, and now Rojas coming in, been in that organization. Give me a little flavor on Beltran and also Rojas.
I think that, you know, it made sense for them to just to part ways. The way it all unfolded in real time, there was really not much else they could do. Also, like, the one thing a new manager gives you, especially coming off the Mickey Callaway season, the one thing a manager gives you is a new start, fresh start. Hey, here's our new guy, no baggage. We're excited, and you kind of trot him out. I mean, the manager is he's your public relations front, and suddenly it's a public relations disaster because you're bringing Beltran over. The reason that Beltran was a hot candidate was because he was skilled in these arts. You know, at first it was legitimate, you know, arts, and then it became black ops, you know, so that's the reason why he was so highly valued. So how are you going to sell that guy? And if things go wrong, how are you going to sell him? It was a no-win situation. They had to cut him loose.
Yeah, he should have hired Joe Girardi anyway, but that's a different topic for another day. That's just a disgruntled and frustrated Mets fan like myself that you're talking to. Brian Kenny, really do appreciate the perspective. This was awesome.
All right, Zach. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.